now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Lucy Potter. Today, let's get tested.
Next week is HIV testing week and Brigstow are live in the studio to talk about the importance of it. Also, Pride.
It's our favourite event of the year, but how can you help it keep going? Darren's live with us to talk about costs and what you can do to help.
All coming today, right here on Shout Out. She's back.
Have you missed me?
Oh, you have.
I've missed me, and I'm with me all week. Yeah.
But to be fair, I mean, Lara was here last week for half of it. It was really weird last week because Lara was here for half of it, and then it was just me and Tara. We did our best, but we did do the news, and we're not as professional as you and Terry.
Right.
So, but Lara did the dum-dum. In fact, she missed it, so we played the jingle
I'm
again.
I'm sure you did a wonderful job.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we held the fort.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Important, yeah.
It's lovely to be back.
Yes.
A few weeks off.
Through the rain.
Yes, so exactly.
We're under a yellow weather warning at the moment, aren't we, in the southwest?
Oh, are we?
More flooding, yeah.
Oh, I'm excited.
Another one.
Yeah. Now, before we get too into chatting, I've got a little bit for you about being an international dance artist. Have a listen to this.
All right.
Well,
cool.
As you know, if you listen to Shout Out regularly, we do get around the planet, but we're back local again and joined by Mathieu Giffre. I hope I pronounced that correctly, Mathieu. Dance and music. Has that always been part of your life, Mathieu?
It has. I would say I'm quite fortunate and a lucky child to have fallen into the magic potion of arts and dance when I was 6 years old. It was kind of an accident when I was offered the opportunity to attend my first dance class, which was not something that was quite current back in the 90s and for a young boy. But my parents offered me this opportunity, and I think I fell immediately in love with the practice and with the art form. And I was fortunate enough to be able to train at a high level and be able to make dance my job. So every day I wake up feeling extremely lucky, fortunate and humbled with the idea that I will do in my day something that I feel very proud of and very passionate about.
When you were going up through school, were you always trying to put into the plays and doing musicals and that?
Oh, you know, there was always an opportunity to perform. I have to be completely realistic and honest with you then, to be a young gay boy in schools doing dance was not an easy path to take. But there was always the family reunions and the Christmases to take all the cousins on board and perform something for the family. So this shiny eyes of uncles and aunts and grandmothers and grandfathers was always something that kept me going and kept me alive.
Tell us a bit about what you're actually up to right now.
So right now, we are touring with my company called Rendezvous Dance, a production that is called The Monocle. It's a production with 8 performers, 6 dancers, 1 singer, 1 BSL interpreter, which tells the wonderful story of a nightclub that existed in Paris in the 1930s called Le Monocle. And that was kind of a secret lesbian nightclub that existed in the Montparnasse district, which was the arty district in Paris back then. I got really interested in this club and its short-lived experience and why it was short-lived and why it was secret. And to me, it felt essential in an effort of visibility, representation, but also telling something about the current world to recreate this club and to share the magic of the atmosphere in this place with our audiences now. Friday in Bournemouth, and next week we will be in Newbury in Aberystwyth.
Wow, you're getting around then, Matthew.
We are. We feel very fortunate to be able to present this important work to many types of audiences across the country. This is our third tour, and we felt like for this tour, we needed to visit the South a little more.
Now, because our time is quite short with this chat, can you tell us how people can get tickets and how they can keep in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So to book tickets, people have to connect on the websites of the venues. So in Bournemouth, we will be performing at the Pavilion Down Southwest, the Corn Exchange in Newbury, and the Aberystwyth Arts Centre at the University in Aberystwyth. So it's very easy to grab tickets from those places. Some places are also offering pay what you wish tickets, which I think are wonderful opportunities for audiences to access arts. And if you want to stay in touch with us and know what we're up to, we are on Instagram and Facebook at Rendezvous Dance. It's RDZVOUSDANCE.
Okay, now, before we go, can you give us an insight of what plans you have for the future? You're already looking at your next production?
We are looking at the next production. Before that, we are also extremely fortunate to be able to expand our touring path. And we will be going with our other production called What Songs May Do, which is a gay love duet on Nina Simone's music. We'll go to Australia with this production in March. So we are very excited about this. And then we will be continuing to develop queer experiences and queer productions in the future. We've been researching a new work on the love story between Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville-West, and a different work that I will keep the theme of for myself.
Matthew, thank you for joining us on Shoutout, and not literally, but in a Shakespearean way, break a leg.
And I will not say the forbidden word, but I will take it with great pleasure.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you. Take care.
Forbidden word. So, can't say that in theatre.
I know.
Break a leg.
Don't. Right.
Anyway, yeah, a little bit about international dance there for you.
Yes.
So,
absolutely.
Had Lara dancing a what's it off?
Dancing
last
the Night Away. Yeah. Oh, really? So, what song?
Oh, I can't remember. It was a new one, and I got it because it had been on the Graham Norton show, and it was a real clubby one.
Okay.
And we were playing it, and she was loving every single minute of it. I'll dig it out. I'll play it again another week.
Yes, it's always good when a music passes the Lara approval test.
Yes, it's really difficult to pass the Lara approval test.
High standards. Yeah, good. Hope you're listening, Lara. She keeps us honest.
So yeah. No, we're sending a load to airs. It's nice to have you back too from the snow.
Thank you. Yep, I'm back from
nice
holiday.
Time.
Yeah, it's been lovely. It's been lovely, and I'm ready.
And now I need to go.
So
yes,
I could say especially with some sunshine at the moment, couldn't you?
The snow and sunshine would be amazing for me.
I did not get a lot of sunshine. We were in the Arctic Circle where a day is about 5 hours long. So
I bet they felt longer.
There was lots of snow and it was dark by 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So,
and you were in bed by 4.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in the sauna. But,
glorious.
Mm-hmm. It was lovely.
Now, as you heard at the start of the show there, next week is International HIV Testing Week, if you're a gay man of my age or older, you'll know it's a very important thing. And to this day, it's getting harder and harder to keep the youngsters educated in it, isn't it? But, you know, we've got Mark in from Brigstow to talk about it. Welcome back, Mark. It's lovely to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, before we go into that, tell us a little bit about Brigstow, just for those that haven't heard about it.
So the Brigstow Project is a Bristol-based charity who supports people living with HIV. That's what they primarily do.
Yeah.
But since the, you know, sexual health contract, it's become more of a, like a one-stop HIV shop.
Mm-hmm.
So now it does a lot of what I do for Brigstow, and what I used to do for Terence Higgins, but now I do for Brigstow, is that we do a lot of outreach and HIV prevention work as well. So we go out and talk to people, particularly around, particularly people who might not be as well served by mainstream services.
Right.
We run Common Ambition Bristol, which is the sexual health and HIV service for people of African and Caribbean heritage. And then I do a lot of similar work, but with people who might not have an address, people who exchange sex for money, trans people. We've just launched a trans project, Project 40, with Bristol Drugs Project, and that's like trans health. And doing what we can to prevent HIV and sexually transmitted infections. Sorry, the word's coming out.
It's great.
It's been a bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah.
So it is National HIV Testing Week. So could you just give us a sort of quick overview of what the aim of the week is and why it's still so important?
Yes, of course. So HIV testing can quite often be perceived as something of like for particular groups to do. So for common perception, it's a gay men thing, or for people of African and Caribbean heritage, or of particular groups, when actually HIV doesn't discriminate at all. So the aim of National HIV Testing Week is to really broadcast and make available HIV testing to anyone who'll listen and anyone who can hear.
Awesome. Okay. And so can you give us what kind of activities and what kind of things will be happening in the week in order to sort of get that message across?
So we are doing we're doing lots of press. So yesterday I tested some politicians. We're doing some other high profile people throughout next week as well. Coming on and seeing your lovely selves to kind of broadcast the word. And yeah. I always knock on the door, don't I? And then we've expanded the amount of testing that we do as well. So I've got testing on Monday. I've just done testing today. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Thursday evening. And then we're also doing some education work. So I'm running a session for professionals about kind of HIV testing, HIV services. There's some other stuff going on as well. We're expanding the amount of outreach that we do as well and what's provided. But mostly what's available and also there's the launch of freetesting.hiv, the website, which comes online every single year during National HIV Testing Week, where anyone in any postcode in the UK can get a free HIV test kit.
So in terms of the testing then, what are the... If there's someone really knows nothing about it, what would be the key highlights to let somebody know about where can they get the service? What does it involve? What's the actual process in going and asking for a HIV test? Is that something that you can just quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in this area, it varies from area to area, but mostly it'll involve a blood test, either like a phlebotomist drawing, someone trained in phlebotomy drawing it from your arm, or just from a finger prick. Mm-hmm. It only needs a small drop of blood in order to find a test for HIV. If you go into a clinic, they'll sit you down, have a word with you, and like a chat with you about the kind of sex that you've been having and what risks you've been exposed yourself to, and the chance of potential exposure, which can feel quite vulnerable to do. We'll kind of admit and appreciate that, but also it's necessary in order to kind of find out this information. And then they will take the blood, and then they will test you. You can do a kit at home, in which you do your finger prick yourself.
As easy as you think that.
No, they can be quite difficult. My best recommendation, do it after a shower, drink loads of water and do it with a friend.
Right.
And don't do it in the bit you used to type either.
No, because it really hurts. The side of your finger.
The things that you learn.
So. Yeah.
Because some people do find HIV, the thought of testing, like quite scary.
Makes it real.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, what? It's great you can do home testing, but that also won't suit everyone, will it? Because they may be in a circumstance where it's not easy to do at home, So what kind of things do you do to kind of like dispel that fear?
To dispel that fear? Well, there's other options as well. At the moment, we've got emergency department opt-out testing. So if you get your blood taken after an accident anywhere in A&E in Bristol, then you have the option. It will be tested for HIV and hepatitis unless you specifically ask not to.
Which has had an amazing effect, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Helps a lot of people.
Yeah, so that's really, really good as well. So a lot of people, if you come into contact with emergency services, it will just happen for you. Mm-hmm. And also, we run now facilitated testing sessions, which isn't quite going to a clinic, and it's essentially doing a postal kit. But someone like myself, mostly me, actually, just helps people do it, is there to kind of to talk with you, help you do it, squeeze your finger, be the friend that you don't want to ask, and answer any questions. And just like I quite often see people's worry and just take it and put it in the bin as well. And also just there to kind of talk people through and help and support people through the process.
Yeah.
What kind of training do people who administer the tests receive in terms of this? Without oversharing, and I can go offline, I receive some incredibly ignorant comments about my perceived sex life from a medical health professional when I went for a HIV test about 9 years ago. I was just wondering if that has been addressed in any sort of way.
It will be. So again, it depends where people study.
Mm-hmm.
It depends where people learn.
Right.
In Bristol, I've done some work with the nursing students on the sexual health modules.
Okay.
And that's really, I really love the inclusivity of that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done work around like LGBT populations and people living with HIV and also adults with learning disabilities as well. So they're really considering how to serve people within that context.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not preachy, is it?
No.
I do remember my first ever test was in the 90s.
Oh.
And the best way I can describe it was the lady that did it looked like something out of, you know, Carry On, or one of the Carry On films, you know, Home Matron. And I was absolutely terrified because I was 18. I get tested regularly even now, and they're not like that at all. They're very open, very talkative. They're there to help, not to lecture.
That's really reassuring, you know. To know that it's changed. What kind of... the landscape of HIV treatment and prevention has actually moved quite a lot in the last 10 years.
Oh, wow, and it continues.
It really has. Mm-hmm. Do you find that people haven't been able to keep up with that, and people are quite surprised by what's moved on? I'm not just talking about PrEP, but I'm also talking about the recent breakthroughs in treatment and all that. Is that part of the outreach that you do around this testing week?
Yeah, so I will kind of talk about it as well, because there's one thing I love about HIV and the HIV world is just how fast it progresses and the innovations that happens in medicine and how that like ripples out to patient care worldwide.
Yeah.
So, for example, at the moment, one of the big innovations is injectable PrEP.
Yeah.
Which is the
is
same.
3 months it lasts? And they've got another one that's
currently
year,
about 6 months. It depends but currently looking about 6 months.
Right.
So, and then the research will be to extend it for longer and longer. So you just need to go annually. But also the genius, I think, in that is that it's both treatment and prevention.
Yeah.
So it'd be the same for someone who's living with HIV as someone who is preventing HIV. Yeah.
And just in case anyone's listening and it's like, what on earth is PrEP? Because you do get that question.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-exposure
prophylaxis, which basically is, it's a drug you can take that gives you protection against HIV. It's not a silver bullet, we should point out. It's very, very effective, but nothing's 100% effective. And of course, it also only does HIV. But it's a game changer as far. I wish it had been around when I was 18, because I was absolutely petrified of HIV back then.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't have a lot of the things we do now.
No,
but to be able to go and get an injection and it lasts 6 months now is absolutely
incredible,
amazing.
Right?
Yeah. And they're all almost on a breakthrough of actually being able to cure it as well, aren't they?
There's a lot of things going on there. Yeah.
I think we're a good decade off it being available.
Yeah, I would still call it not curable until there's a cure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there is more and more work than there has been before, but there will be other steps, and I think it will be cured one day.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere that people can go online or on social media to find out more about National HIV Testing Week?
Yes. So you can Google, there's loads of places, so you can Google,
and I bet you've got them all.
I do have them all, I'm afraid. So you can Google National HIV Testing Week, and you'll find the freetesting.hiv website. Of course, you can just type in freetesting.hiv to order your kit. Terence Higgins Trust will have loads of information as well, because they're the leaders in the national organisation. The UNO Sexual Health website, so our local sexual health services in Bristol, North Somerset and South Gloss, will have information as well. You can come chat to me in person on Monday at Eastree's GP surgery, on Thursday afternoon at Southmead at the Greenway Centre, Southmead Development Trust.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday evening at Bristol Drugs Project at the Prism LGBT specific clinic, and then any other time by getting in touch with Brookstone.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And if you're not in, because we're talking very much about the vicinity of where we are now, which obviously is Bristol, we go out right the way down south and across in Wales, but there are local things to you down there too as well, so do check them out. And as Mark says, the kit's available across the UK, isn't it?
So anywhere in Great Britain.
So, brilliant. Listen, it's been lovely to have you on the show. It's a subject that's very dear to my heart too. It's one I could talk to you about for an hour, I know. But yeah, best of luck with it next week. I really hope it raises the awareness. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. Back in a minute. Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Nice bit of Chapel Rowan.
Or Roan.
Is it Chapel Roan? Chapel Roan.
Okay. Yeah, but we can call it Chapel Roan.
We should call it what she wants to be called.
I know, I'm just kidding. I love Chapel Roan.
I asked Mark if he's LePage or LePage.
You did. And am I Peregrine or Peregrine?
That's going to stick. Yeah, it's going to stick. I'm going to end up calling him LePage now.
And I'm going to be Peregrine.
Just because he's posher.
Ezra or Israel.
It's not all about you, you know.
Yes, it is. I haven't been here for 3 weeks. And we've missed you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. You're going to hear me for a while now.
Yeah. Well, we've got news coming up. I forgot it does this slowy down bit at the end.
It's the best bit.
So
she looks
like
amazing at the awards the other night.
She did. She changed outfit about four times
and everyone
as well.
Kicked off, like, and I'm like, queen. Oh my goodness, come on.
She looked good. She looked good. Did.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, contrary to last week where we did our best to cover things, I think me and Tara did a very good job, to be fair. Should we get back to some professional
go
news
on,
reading
then.
With the two
don't
of you?
Look at me.
This is Showtime News. Welcome along.
The Good Law Project, Joe, has written to supporters of the progressive legal group detailing how a lawyer called Sarah Fillmore is trying to silence the group. Joe explains that last summer, their publication detailed allegations concerning barrister Sarah Fillmore's conduct towards a young transgender woman. They characterise this behaviour as harassment. Ms Fillmore is now pursuing a defamation lawsuit against Joe, asserting these allegations are false. Upon the initial exposure of a transphobic harassment, Ms Fillmore did not apologise. Instead, she intensified her social media activity and gained a prominent ally in author Joanne Rowling, one of the richest women in the country. But the Good Law Project maintains that they will not be bullied into silence and that they remain committed to standing for what is right and what will contest this lawsuit fully. They believe everyone deserves to live free from hate and they are prepared to defend that principle in court if necessary. In conclusion, they say our ability to hold power to account, especially when the personal and legal risks are significant, relies on public support. We ask you to consider joining us in this effort to ensure we can continue standing up to bullies.
The LGBTQIA arts community in Sydney is mourning the loss of comedian and performer Brent Thorpe, who has died at the age of 61. The news was confirmed by his husband, Travis de Jong, in a heartfelt Facebook post. In his tribute, de Jong wrote, "On 6th of January, I lost the love of my life, Brent," describing him as "my dearly loved and devoted husband." Thorpe was recognised as an emerging and vital voice in LGBTQIA plus comedy. His material was noted for its deeply personal and political edge, often challenging societal double standards and exploring the realities of queer life. He openly spoke about his refusal to grow old gracefully and used his platform to critique biases facing our community.
The UK's premier kink festival, Fetish Week London FWL, is set to return to the capital for its milestone 15th anniversary. The flagship event will run for 8 full days from 5th to the 12th of July. Organisers have confirmed the week will once again be based at the popular warehouse venue Electro Works, described as one of London's trendiest spaces. This location will serve as the exclusive hub for the festival's official events throughout the week. The anniversary scheduled promises a mix of returning favourites and new elements alongside the core programme. Many of London's fetish retailers, kink-friendly bars and community organisations will host external events offering attendees an even broader range of social activities. A central feature will be the FL FWL 2026 Event Hub and Gear Market, open from Wednesday 8th July to Saturday 11th July at Letro Works. The hub will host a market with various fetish retailers, a secondhand gear swap shop, and a social space with DJs, extended educational demonstrations, masterclasses, sober meetups, and discussion panels. In a statement, organisers highlighted the event's evolution, noting the way we play, socialise, and how we identify as kinksters continues to evolve. So we must also continue to make changes. They promised a few surprises and new updates throughout the week.
In arts news, the communist daily newspaper The Morning Star recommends a new and wide-ranging book on the lifetimes and legacy of Oscar Wilde, which has been penned by his grandson, Mervyn Holland. The book opens with the seismic event of Wilde's 1895 trial and imprisonment for gross indecency. Holland details how his wife, Constance, changed the family name to Holland and fled to the continent with their two sons, Cyril and Vivian, to escape the scandal. Constance's early death left the boys under the care of an unsympathetic guardian who separated them at boarding schools in a bid to conceal their parentage and shield them from homophobic bullying. Holland's research extends beyond the immediate family, examining the bitter feud between Wilde's former lover, Lord Alfred Bosie Douglas, and his loyal friend Robbie Ross, who became Wilde's literary executor. The biography also highlights the posthumous controversies surrounding Wilde, such as the mutilation of the angel sculpture on his tomb in Paris, an absurdity the author suggests Wilde himself would have relished. The book charts Wilde's remarkable rehabilitation in the latter half of the 20th century, contrasting his status as a gay icon with the deep prejudice that existed into the 1960s. Mr. Holland, however, offers no complacency, recounting his own terrifying experience of joining a gay pride march in Moscow that was met with violence from neo-fascists and police, and underscores the ongoing global struggle for LGBTQ plus rights. After Oscar, The Legacy of a Scandal is available from Europa Editions. It costs £30. Be sure to buy your copy for an LGBTQIA plus or progressive bookstore, which will keep the money circulating in the rainbow economy.
The Queer Spirit Group will be holding a drumming circle to celebrate the lives of gay and bi men who came before us in the 1710s and would use what were then called molly houses, bawdy taverns where same-sex dancing was permitted. This month, London's Radical Fairies and Queer Spirits community will convene at the Watchief Hall in South London for a drum circle dedicated to the city's deep queer history. The event, timed just before the final full moon of winter in Virgo, will specifically commemorate the 1726 police raids on London's molly houses. In February of that year, a series of raids led to arrests, trials, and the execution of three men. The gathering aims to meet the spirit of the molly, celebrating a queer subculture that was already vibrant and well established over 300 years ago. Historical accounts describe a flourishing scene. Establishments like Mother's Clap's Molly House in Holborn served as regular meeting places or clubs where men socialised under maiden nicknames, danced together and enjoyed festival nights that sometimes involved drag. They even used a specialised slang.
And finally, a major review of scientific studies has concluded that trans women exhibit strength of fitness levels similar to those of cisgender women within months of starting hormone therapy. The findings challenge widespread claims that trans female athletes retain an inherent physical advantage in women's sports. The participation of trans athletes, particularly trans women, in female competition remains a subject of intense global debate. Concerns over fairness often centre on the alleged biological advantages linked to male puberty. In response, several sporting bodies have implemented policies, including outright bans, citing advantages from early testosterone exposure. But this new research conducted by scientists in Brazil offers a significant counterpoint. Crucially, the review found no observable differences in key performance metrics. There was no significant gap in upper or lower body strength or in maximal oxygen consumption, a critical measure of aerobic fitness between transgender and cisgender women.
That's your shout-out news for this week. Stay tuned to community radio stations, internet podcasts and your local queer press for more through the week. And we will see you here once again next time for shout-out news. This has been Ezra Peregrine.
And Terry Starr.
Shout
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you. For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
Now, I said it was a bumper song last week, had Lara up and dancing. I found it. It's by Tiny Temper. It's called Energy. Have a listen.
The Shout Out Podcast.
See what I mean? Bit of a banger, that one.
Sorry. We're going down one of the clubs, won't we?
Mind you, being 18 and bopping your tits off.
Ezra's just disappeared off into the corner to throw shapes. I don't know when they'll be back, but we'll have to man the fort until they return.
So is that your cup of tea?
Yeah, I'd throw a few shapes to that.
Yeah.
So, as long as I can be home and in bed by midnight, I will. Yeah. I will go to the club. But
there is. I'm sure we've talked about it before, haven't we? There is a afternoon.
There are so many daytime raves.
Oh, there.
Yeah. It's really, really good. Actually, the daytime rave and also the sober rave scene has really exploded. And then also there's a very big because apparently this is what counts for old in this world, the over 30s club scene. No. Then to be fair, by the time I reached the age of 30, I was like, yeah, no, I am done with nightclubs. So,
I carried on to a 40.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think, I went to a club a few months ago and I thought it was great, but it did take me about a month to recover.
Oh, yeah. So. That's the problem, isn't it? The older you get, the longer it takes to recover.
Yeah, I'm just waiting.
By the time you're Steph's age, you're like, I'm not going out now. I want to go to bed.
I'm waiting for the daytime queer raves, Bristol. Come on. I know somebody can do it. I know
somebody
someone
can
do it. Oh, yeah. There's some good queer sober raves in Bristol, but I now need them to be done by 9 o'clock, please. And then it will all be good. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Castro's club.
God.
Down at the bottom of Old Market was the first one to get a 6 a.m. licence.
Wow.
And carrying on till dawn in the summer months, you'd open the doors and you'd come out, stagger out into the sunlight.
Oh, wow.
Waiting for the first bus home.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll be getting some more of that reminiscing, Terry, if my project that I keep on telling you that I want to start it, and we will do it and we will find more about it. So
now I'm going to ask you if you could possibly let Ez back in.
What, they're too busy dancing? Oh, okay. All right. Hang on. Okay. Just because I like them.
So, but yeah, I remember the fridge in Brits in Brixton.
Yeah, yes. Fridge for people who know why they are here.
Yes, Love Muscle was on monthly.
Love Muscle, yeah. They brought that back recently for one night.
They did, yeah. Yeah, it spawned some amazing DJs. And the like over the years it was open, and some big artists had their break by having the tracks played in there.
Eamon,
if you remember Eamon, massive dance person. So anyway, hello, sorry, we're keeping you up.
Sorry,
we have a quick snooze in the corner.
It's been a long week. One went to the bathroom and it's so busy out there. I don't know, there's been an event on at the ECC, yes.
They'll have us tonight, yeah.
Yeah, and everybody's in a lovely mood. It was very nice. Sure. But anyway.
Well, I have a little bit of bad news, because we're going to talk to Darren Carter, who listeners will know is Bristol Pride.
Yes.
Because,
he
of course,
is Bristol
all
Pride.
Over, he is Mr. Bristol Pride, isn't he? Especially when he's got his lovely coat on that he wears
for
the event. But apparently he's very ill and not been able to get out of bed to come join us.
Oh.
So, but we are still going to kind of cover the feet.
Yes, we are.
Do some justice. So, apologies, Darren, we're getting this wrong, but we've got facts open all around us. And basically, what we wanted to do was talk about A, the importance of Pride, and B, the sustainability of it. So, now, I don't know. I mean, what does Pride mean to you?
Oh, this is the thing, is it's a deeply personal question that then has to apply to the widest possible community. So,
you can answer what it means to you. To everyone.
I mean, I guess when I was younger, it was a big party. I didn't really think too much about...
It was a safe space for me when I was younger as well.
Was it? I think it was a party. It was fun, kind of. But now I think of it more... I never really thought about the... I never thought too deeply because I was... very shallow person about the original about the origins of Pride and where it actually came from. So but now I'm older, as we all know, because I would like a I would like Bristol to set up a queer daytime rave event.
Just talking
please
about that before you hear it.
Queer sober daytime rave event, please. It does that element of it now, I think, means more to me. So that's my view of Pride.
Yeah, and what about yourself?
Well, I never had really the opportunity to go to Pride until Bristol Pride with you guys. That was my first. I mean, I went to a very
lost
small
your Pride
one,
virginity.
But I'm not going to count that first one because, the company was terrible. Less said, the better.
Right.
So my first Pride was with Shoutout, and it was absolutely amazing. But growing up in a small town, didn't really know how to navigate my queerness. Coming out was a real struggle. So I think having the freedom in my mid-30s to experience it in the way that I did was really incredible. And I think it's always been political, but the more I attend and the more I read, the more I understand just how political it is and how important it is. And also, you know, with everything that's going on, well, it has been going on for many, many years now, but is of course becoming increasingly hateful towards the queer community and to trans people. Mm-hmm. I think Pride is more important now, but not I don't want to say more important now than ever. I just think that it's always been important. You know, there's always been people trying to push the focus onto the queer community, onto gay men, onto trans people now, to distract everybody. But I think, you know, there's so many people that are marginalised and need that support right here, right now. And that is what Pride is. It's such a safe space, and is what Bristol Pride is.
I hope I'm not misquoting it, but I'm pretty sure I read recently something from Peter Tatcher where he said, you know, you can't stop banging the drum and
that's
saying
right.
We're here, because the minute you do, you lose the rights. They get eroded too quick,
right,
don't they?
Somebody said the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. That applies to the queer community as much as any other community.
I mean, for me, it was when I think the first one I went to, gosh, was around about 2000, 2001. I did the London one. There wasn't one running here in Bristol at the time. It was kind of on its hiatus between the older group and the new group that run it now. But I remember feeling this sense of elation that I could be outdoors and hold my mate's hand and kiss someone and feel safe, which I and to this day I still don't feel safe holding my husband's hand walking down the street, which is, you know, tragic.
That's
in 2026. But I still can't. I'm of the age where I'm too scared to. So you know, but these days with Shout Out, for me it's more about the statement of, you know, saying to everyone, look, we are here, and look how many of us there are before you start going, you know, oh, shut up, there's only one of you. It's not. There's, what, 40,000 last year?
Yeah.
And that's just at one Pride. That's just a Bristol Pride, you know.
I think something that touches me every year as well is to see the children and the parents. I mean, everything moves me. The Pride March always sort of makes me feel very emotional. But to see the young people being loved by their families is what I want for every young person and every queer person.
Yeah.
You know, I was seeing 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds.
It's lovely. I mean, Terry's
really
the same as me. You probably caught the tail end of it. We're a similar-ish age, aren't we? I think I'm a bit older than you.
I think I came out a bit after you, though.
But I mean, we grew up in Section 28.
That's probably why I didn't come out when I did.
No one told you it was okay. In fact, for years,
my
I
house
thought
captain,
it was
but,
very
you know,
wrong.
Ours was just like, don't talk about it. That's how I grew up. Just don't talk about it. If people are gay, you just don't say anything. They're just...
Oh, well, the people that came out of my school got horrendously bullied.
Yeah. Yeah,
undermined.
There was like one gay kid, and even they weren't out. It was like a rumour at my school.
But they're very probably much the same. They definitely wouldn't be the only one. I mean,
I was there, but I didn't know.
My school was slightly different. Actually, the teachers actually resisted it, Section 28, and spoke about homosexuality and had us read poems and things like that.
That's
put their necks
good.
On the line.
Yeah, it is.
And they had the backing of the trade union and so on, and they broke the law for the benefit of queer students and indeed the wider education of all students. So that is something I many years later met one of the teachers and I said thank you to them for that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It is.
Amazing. Yeah.
We had a teacher who we all knew was we knew she was a lesbian, but it was just not mentioned or ever talked about or anything like that. It was
we had a teacher who had a very special friend
right?
That she had lived with for 20 years.
Yeah.
They just get on so well. Yeah. And they've just not met the right man and they really love cats.
Yeah.
They're just best friends. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but anyway, taking it back to Pride, because the reason that we wanted to talk about it was, it's been staggering the number of sponsors that are pulled out of sponsoring prides across the UK, not just across the UK as well.
Across the world.
I mean, America is suffering horrendously. What seems to happen in America seems to happen here.
It does. And I think Stonewall did some recent reporting and they're saying that, we can talk about sponsorship in a minute and the whys and wherefores of that corporate donations. In 2024, corporate donations were about sort of 350,000. We're taking these stats from a Sky News article. But that halved from 2024, that halved to 143,000 in 2025.
Yeah.
So they literally dropped off a cliff in the space of 12 months.
Yeah.
And at the same time, costs for putting on Pride, you had the chairman of UK Pride Organisers Network saying that they're going up as much as maybe 15-20% year on year. So it's a double blow of... It's getting more expensive.
But artists want more post-COVID because they lost money during that, and councils and security, everything's going up.
And probably also a greater recognition of safety and accessibility and what the true cost of and it should be there, but I think... when I went to Pride in the early 2000s, nobody gave a stuff about accessibility. It was just not on anybody's agenda.
No.
So I'm absolutely not saying this. It's just a recognition as we realise how truly wide our community is and how truly we can enable our community to participate. That's what I'm not having I really hope I'm putting myself across in the right manner.
No, you are.
So
and Bristol Pride are very pro that. They always have everything is signed on all the stages.
Yeah.
So if you're hard of hearing, you can read the signer. They have a big screen next to the stage that zooms in and out. So if you can't see well, you can see on that. And everywhere is wheelchair accessible. They put that path stuff down, don't they?
And that's just one example of costs. There are other sort of environmental and other legislative permit-based costs. Yeah. That are also and also labour and all the rest.
Did you pull some up, didn't you, Ian?
Yeah, I did. I was just rereading them, and the toilets alone are over £15,000.
That's for Bristol Pride.
Yeah. So the total cost of Bristol Pride last year was £714,613.58.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And since 2023, there's been a 25% increase. With some costs tripling in price.
Have you got any examples of what has tripled? Or is there anything that from those costs is quite, really stands out as, wow, I really didn't think that would cost what it does?
Yeah, so waste alone. So sorting out the waste.
So environmental compliance.
Is £12,000.
Wow.
The artist fees, £144,500, water is nearly £7,000. Power is nearly £26,000. The structuring and marquees is over 32,000. The events operations 86,700. So yeah, it's a huge amount of money, and it's a huge amount of work. And Pride, as is said on the post, allows the community to be visible, proud and empowered. And it goes on to talk about how we can support Pride this year and every year through wristbands.
So Bristol are taking a bit of a...
It's still free.
It is.
You don't have to pay.
No.
I didn't know this until Lucy pointed this out earlier, but they've done a true cost ticket.
Yes,
The normal one's going up to £18.50, the day supporter, which has got general admission. They've all got the stuff like, free bus travel everywhere and the like, because that's sponsored. But this year, for the first time, they've done a true cost ticket, which is £52, which is what everyone should pay for them to cover their costs.
Okay.
And you can buy that if you want to be a really nice person and really support them.
And I would think, I want Pride to be accessible. I know personally, I'm privileged enough to be able to afford that.
Yeah.
And considering what I get for the day,
because
I think that's day and night, four stages. What is it? The main stage, the cabaret stage, the tent, the alternative stage, all the stalls. I think, and programming for like 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very good value. I am lucky enough to be able to pay that, and I will do that.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think if you are, absolutely, and if you're not, that's okay.
Yeah, it
you
is know, totally
it's
for fine.
Everybody here, there, and in between, and that's what makes it so accessible. I'm able to afford that, and I absolutely would pay it. And that's the thing when I look at the other gigs that I go to, I don't get an all day event.
Yeah.
This is an
you
all
compare
day
it
event.
To what you pay what you'd pay for any other festival. Yeah. All that kind of stuff,
or just one show,
so
one person.
I think this is really great from Bristol Pride. Really, really saying, you know, this is actually what it costs,
transparent, isn't it?
And it's transparent, which yeah. I think is really,
always
really
been
useful.
The way, you know, and they want to raise money to give to other good causes. I mean,
mm-hmm. yeah, they do. They give micro grants.
I think it's coming up to the date. If you do want to apply for money from Pride, but if you're doing something good,
yeah.
And a small amount
like
of money
up
would
to £500, yeah, for emerging artists and.
And I know groups I think you can get a couple of thousand or something.
Yeah.
So you have to apply to it, because if they don't make the money, they don't have that to do.
Yeah,
that.
And we want Bristol Pride to continue going for so many reasons.
And I think it's interesting, I kind of like to bring up the drop-off in corporate sponsorship, which could be externally driven, but also I think it's another... If you remember, of quite a few years ago, there was a lot of... there was a perception that some companies were possibly jumping on the bandwagon a little mm-hmm. bit.
Rainbow washing.
Yeah, rainbow washing. Yeah, no, uh-huh. make it rainbow, and therefore all that kind of stuff. And you know, credit to Bristol Pride, and also a lot of prides have started doing this. That in order to be a sponsor, you have to align with their sponsorship policy. Many prides these days now post their ethical sponsorship mm-hmm. policy. Mm-hmm. I was just looking at Exeter Pride. This is another Exeter Pride is a free Pride event, but I was looking at their ethical corporate sponsorship policy, and I think that's really good as well. Mm-hmm. But it is brilliant, but that is also it narrows the but I think in a good way.
Yeah, so do I.
It narrows the amount of money, but in a good way. But it shows alignment with what Pride is originally all about. Yeah. So
Pride are asking a favour this year. They're releasing a lot of information earlier. You may have noticed mm-hmm. they've already released first round of artists, including Jason Donovan.
JD.
Yeah.
You know apparently that Jace. Does know that Bristol has a Jason Donovan.
Yes,
he's been
there. Yeah. Yeah, so, but yeah, a very quick rundown. You can get a true cost ticket, which is £52. General admission ticket is £18.50. If you'd like to fast track, you can do that for £22.50 and get ahead. You can do a fast track day and night, which is £36.50. Or if you're an absolutely wonderful human being, you can get a super supporter ticket, which is £60. They do concessions, so you can get them there £11. They also do a ticket called a pay it forward.
Okay.
Which allows you to buy a ticket for someone else and they'll pass it on.
That's lovely.
So if you would like to donate a ticket to someone who can't afford one, you can do that. That's £11. If you just want to buy the after party, that's £14.15. There's a couple of options there because it depends which party you want to go to.
And also...
all on bristolpride.co.uk.
Possibly, and I don't know if Darren would be very happy me mentioning this, but... Other Pride events also take place not under the umbrella of Bristol Pride on that day, which is so Soft Pride, which is run by Soft Butch. That was a partner Pride event, but it was a separate. So those kinds of things are also happening.
Yeah, I think it's about you. Can,
I don't want to take things away from Darren.
I don't think it is.
And I'm sure he would go, yeah, no, there's something there for everyone.
That's about what I was just going to say, that there is something out there for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about the Saturday. There's a week and a bit worth of events, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Comedy Festival always sells out quick. I've yet to make it. It used to always be on a Thursday night when we were on air, but I think it's now moved. I'm hoping it's coming back. I've seen it's gone on tour, but the Wardrobe Theatre usually does a Murder She Didn't Write, which is an improv.
You do like that.
No,
you have mentioned it a lot.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It is
good.
Yeah, I want to go to the one that we were talking about the other week.
Scritch Cabaret,
something like
Dyke
that.
Dyke Systems Unlimited, Small Town Boy.
But it was an unscripted one.
Okay, so, yeah.
I just think they're great, and the Murder She Didn't Write. I've never laughed so much in my life. It was so much fun.
That reminds
me. Don't know if it's coming
around
or not.
Is it called Drunk Shakespeare? Where they try and do Shakespeare, but the lead actor has to drink all through the show. By the end, they basically can't perform. But it sells. I'm pretty sure it's called Drunk Shakespeare. But I'm really looking forward.
do a shout out like that, but it's illegal to do.
We'll just say it's water. I am really looking forward to Sister Sledge, Jace Don, and everybody else. Absolute Britney. Absolute Britney is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes.
I cannot wait.
Just because you mentioned it earlier, I'll point it out again. If you can't afford to go to Pride, it is free.
It is.
You can go and not pay anything.
That's right. You can.
You know, no one's expecting you to. They're expecting you to help if you can.
Yes.
If it's within your means, do
That's
so.
Right.
Also, if you just don't like being in a crowded space and you still want to take part,
I've heard there's a radio station.
Another reason that means you can't go, you might not be out yet. We are on air the whole way through the day from backstage, and you get the extra bit because we talk to the artists, which you don't get there on the day. You can actually hear us interview them as they come on and off the stage. So it's always a very full on day, but we kick it off with a team out on the march, which was you.
It was the three of you, wasn't it?
Yeah, Steph and Lucy and Ezra.
We can. It can only get better from what we did. It was pretty chaotic, but I enjoyed it. It was
There's
good.
So much going on. There's so much energy. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. And it will come. It will come flying round you, wait. So much going on this year because we've got that, and we've also got the Irish Film Festival turning 20.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So all sorts. Hopefully, we'll be catching up with Berwyn soon. Actually, about that, because it goes on tour, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In January. So, anyway, that's it for this week. If you want to hear any of this show or any of the other previous ones, they're all available as podcasts on all good podcast providers, as well as on our brand spanking new website.
So, to listen again or download them, head to our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Next week it's a ballroom blitz. Different type of dancing. From myself, from Terry, from Ayres, and the lovely Lucy, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.